This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 26th of January, 2022, and it is FOMC Day. We'll be talking plenty about that today. First up, as we mentioned in yesterday's podcast, we do have our quarterly outlook out. You can find that, as you can see, on slide 2 in today's slide deck, which you can find the link of in today's podcast description. Go to .saxo/QO. And we have a webinar. We're hosting a webinar tomorrow for the general public. If you'd like to sign up for that, you can sign up on by just typing the URL webinars.saxo in your browser, heading across as we cover everything across asset classes for the quarter and really sort of the year ahead as we look forward. And, a lot of this was written, of course, before this latest bout of volatility in equity markets. We're still seeing plenty of volatility. Yesterday, in some places, we're seeing signs of stability, but generally still a negative day. You can see on slide 3 where we are on the NASDAQ, that 14,000 area, really critical. You can see those major highs around that area back there in early 2021. But if you look at our equity theme baskets, the bubble stocks, for example, still having a very ugly day. A couple of other sectors in the tech area also experiencing negativity. A little bit of hot money going into crypto and blockchain. But Peter, it's still pretty nervous times here. We'll talk a little bit about where the market is positioning ahead of today's FOMC meeting on what it's thinking with the Fed. But where do you think we stand here?
Yeah, as I said in our internal call, John, there has been some great data coming out from JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley, suggesting that a lot of market makers in the two previous sessions have been tossed around the arena, so to speak, by retail flow, with heavy selling in the early hours and then heavy buying in late hours, and it is mainly, I think, a lot of the retail flow right now that is driving this underlying volatility and massive trading ranges. I think there's a lot of people that are confused about what's happening. They haven't experienced anything like this because there are a lot of newcomers. So that means, of course, that this index can go anywhere, right, in the next week or two, especially given depending on what happens tonight with the FOMC. So, I mean, in my book, I mean, the NASDAQ 100 could go down to 13,000. We could easily go back to the 200-day moving average, 15,000, depending on what happens. I think it's just there's a lot of change going on, and right now we are up quite a bit this morning. And you're right in terms of the theme baskets. If you look at I should probably have put in the sorted on months to date, because that would have been a little bit more fun. But you can see that the commodity sector and defense stocks have done pretty well, and emerging markets. I think that the emerging markets is quite interesting given how strong the dollar is. That's very unusual and very odd. So if you think the dollar is going down, John, then I'm really keen on the emerging markets to do very well this year, especially also with China forced in a position to do a lot of stimulus. So this commodity sector, I said it yesterday in a webinar, people should get some exposure to this. I mean, it's all about getting a much more firm and balanced portfolio this year with everything that's going on in growth stocks. And then just quickly before you go to tonight, John, slide 4, maybe a little bit provocative. I'm just asking whether bonds are telling equities to relax a bit. And what I'm trying to say with this is that the 10-year yield in the US have still stopped climbing higher. We certainly stabilized. And also the high yields, the global high yields, it's not really have been selling off. And Altea has said that a couple of times as well. The spread is still very much contained. And I think if we were moving towards a phase of a full capitulation in the market, you would see the high yield move. So it's still at the margin, very much technologies and speculative growth that have been hit the hardest.
And that's a great thing to pull out, because you mentioned a couple things. You mentioned retail flows, which of course are going to be a bit hotter and more volatile in the shorter term, whereas the longer term stuff, as indicated in this in things like credit and bond funds, that's more institutional and real money, which is going to be slower to shift around. So an interesting thing there. So the question would be, to be play devil's advocate, is whether that lags badly. And I thought the 2018 experience really showed to me that the market is very different than where it was and prior to the global financial crisis, where there was a big leading element or leading indicator was in credit, where it really sort of pre-announced a lot of strain coming ahead. Or is it just badly lagging this time? I really don't have the answer. It's just a question mark over that. And then finally, just pulling away from your baskets, mentioned crypto doing okay yesterday. It's a really key or an interesting thing to watch over the coming couple of days, because we have seen a very significant rebound, at least in Bitcoin itself. Is this quote unquote dumb money, or is this a leading indicator in terms of liquidity and signifying that we're going to see a bigger rebound in other speculative sectors? I don't know, but an interesting test there. It is also interesting though, the divergence there. We have Bitcoin up pretty sharply. It still needs to get recover that 40,000 level, but Ethereum is still a little bit bogged down. And formerly Ethereum was a star performer, at least on the way up in crypto during the big bull run last year. Okay, I want to get to you, Ole, in a minute, but I just want to round off the discussion around what Peter's talking about in terms of, well, not just credit, but where the Fed is tonight. And the market has been pulling back on its expectations for more hawkishness from the Fed, recognizing it to some degree, or hoping that the Fed will recognize to some degree that it is impacting risk sentiment and may sort of halt the string of hawkish surprises we've seen basically since around the early November timeframe. You can see on slide 5, we've pulled back in terms of Fed expectations around 10 basis points for where we're going to end 2022. If you look at things like the Eurodollar short-term interest rate futures, and then further forward, you can see that the trend has been less pronounced, and we're sort of pulling back above the so-called terminal rate of around 2% for where the Fed is going to end this cycle. The market really is still convinced that that's about the long-term maximum that the Fed can attain. As it begins to tighten rates. But of course, inflation will be the key here. And I'm wondering if the market's a bit complacent and expecting the Fed to put on the brakes so quickly. One area we're seeing some further risks of inflation, Ole, is in food, and specifically in the grains prices. You've got a couple of thoughts there as we're looking at these markets.
Yeah, and rewind a little bit to what Peter said with the commodities having such a decent performance this month. Looking down over the table, it really is the energy sector that's had a strong month, and is also just highlighting that even though we've seen this risk adversity this week, some like energy is holding up very well. Also, the grain sector and the grain sector is being right now being supported by the uncertainty in Ukraine. Wheat prices in Paris has been breaking higher the past few days. We reached the highest level since June in corn yesterday. And we have to remember that the Black Sea area exports or supply around 30% of global wheat. Wheat supplies, and also Ukraine is a major exporter of corn. So these two markets are really caught in the crosshairs of the uncertainties that we have in that area right now. And at the same time, also we've had some rough weather in the U.S. and South America this so far this season. Dry weather condition just reducing the outlook. So this just adding to the continuous story about high food prices, elevated food prices this year. Adding to that the punitively high cost of fertilizers, which will become a theme as we move into the spring months here in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, and then on the crude oil front, we saw some signs of pretty clear correlation. Of course, if the market is concerned, looking ahead, concerned with Omicron variant, with risk sentiment potentially leading to lower growth, you'd see crude oil down a bit. But it's been pretty firm relative to the action in other asset markets. I don't know to what degree that's a geopolitical premium there we've seen over the last two sessions, or at least off the lows of a couple of sessions ago, or whether crude oil is just becoming its own market. So what's your assessment of where crude oil stands?
Well, the underlying fundamentals are still very strong, and we can see that on the slide 8 here. You can see even though we just went through that mini correction, which I call it a mini because we didn't even get close to that 38.2% retracement of the run up we had since mid December. During that correction, we haven't really seen any impact on some of the time spreads. I put that on the right hand side there. You can see these are the front month spreads in WTI and Brent, and right now WTI is leading by the front. So there's almost a $1.20 difference between the spot month, so it's trading above the next, and that is clearly a signal of tightness. So and the fact that it didn't come down during this correction, the price just shows that the underlying demand is still very firm. Geopolitical risk associated with Russia clearly adding a different another dimension, but for now the fundamentals just point to higher prices. The market will look for clues today in the weekly stock report. The API report, a small draw yesterday. Surveys are pointing to an increase, but that could create some volatility around that announcement this afternoon. But generally, just like other markets, we will be watching the FOMC, but it just seems like the crude oil market is really quite immune to outside market developments right now. It's instead of focusing on the internal tightness that we're seeing.
Yeah, and if we look at the FX market ahead of the FOMC tonight, I've been kind of surprised at the degree to which the dollar has been kind of sidelined and sideways, as we've seen a pretty traumatic risk off event here, risk aversion across global markets. You would expect in former regimes to see much firmer dollar in that case. So of course, we have to watch for what the Fed exactly what it says. The idea of a 50 basis point rate hike in March seems a bit far-fetched given where markets have gone. But you know, we have to watch for everything from their guidance, whether they're soft pedaling their guidance now relative to the hawkish shift we've seen in the last couple of months, the discussion around quantitative tightening once the quantitative easing is wound down to zero. All of this will be key tonight for the U.S. dollar, as will for the case of the Canadian dollar, the Bank of Canada today. A majority expecting, but still a sizable minority not expecting, a rate hike today of 25 basis point, their first for the cycle from the Bank of Canada. And you can see the dollar Canada chart here, where that 125 level is really critical. We tried to many times to puncture below or punch below that level. You can see the chart there on slide 6, major trend line, the 200-day moving average and the psychological 125 level all shaping up around there. So two central bank meetings head-to-head in today's calendar. Look at the broader market in FX, though, the broader developments in currency. The Chinese renminbi maintaining its strong path. I've really been surprised to the degree to which they've maintained a strong renminbi policy. Let's see where that is looking post-Olympics. But for now, that is a very salient theme. The yen strength has been on, of course, risk aversion, plus the top coming off of the yields in sovereign safe haven yields. And we have the weakest of the lot, the New Zealand dollar. And we have a CPI report up tonight out of New Zealand, the quarterly CPI report. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that CPI level surprising to the upside. And the very weak Swedish krona, which is a very much linked to weak Europe and the concerns around the geopolitics. But the Swedish krona also one of the most sensitive to risk sentiment in general. All right, let's get to some stocks to watch today. We've seen a really dramatic markdown in a lot of these mega caps, Peter, a lot of these very highly valued, you know, what were formerly just really high-flying huge companies on just the, you know, seeming perma-growth in their earnings. And we're seeing strong results from Microsoft once again, and a market that's not enthused about that. So what's your takeaway there, and what are the other stocks to watch today?
Yeah, so Microsoft reported yesterday, and we've put in the share price there. It's just astonishing, right? It's one of the good old classic monopolies in operating system. I think they support 90% global market share in that, or a little bit more. They were growing the top line by 20%. They beat expectations on both top line and bottom line. The market was not really happy, and as you can see on the price chart there, we have corrected somewhat. And I think it's perfectly fair for Microsoft to be coming down. It could be coming down even more. It's we have a completely different discount rate now coming into the market, and it's just a high duration asset because of so much of the value of Microsoft is coming from far into the future. Not that it's outrageously an expensive stock, but it's more expensive than your average stock in the S&P 500, so it has to correct more. I think the positive story to take away, if you're a Microsoft shareholder, obviously was the outlook. They're posting a very strong outlook. They're saying, you know, demand in PC and software is still, especially on the hardware side, Xbox consoles, vastly exceeding current supplies that they can deliver. So that's, you know, mimicking what we're seeing in Sony and PlayStations, etc. So it's still the hardware side seeing incredible strong demand. Vestas reporting, or had reporting preliminary figures this morning. I have noticed a lot of companies feel very eager to go out and and post these preliminary numbers as fast as possible, given the recent turmoil. I think that's an interesting trend to watch. And they're cutting their fiscal year 2022 revenue guidance, as you can see below where the market was. And I don't understand why the market is so surprised about this. They were trading lower, and now they're attempting a rebound here in early trading in Copenhagen. But we already knew from Siemens Gamesa that, you know, the rising steel prices is just really not good for these wind turbine makers. Their order books are weaker, and they are getting pressured on their margins. So that's it. And then I think if you like the green transformation, I think the Next Era Energy, which is arguably the biggest renewable energy company in the US, they put out some pretty, I would say pretty solid outlook for 2022 and 2023 on their operating earnings. So a pretty impressive thing there. So if you're interested in that, look for Next Era Energy.
Yeah, and I was just in Texas, and I drove out to West Texas, and there's still lots of trucks carrying lots of drill pipe out to West Texas. So fossil fuel's not dead yet.
It's not dead.
All right, we still have a very, very busy earnings season, to say the very least. The biggest name in terms of speculative fervor for sure is the Tesla. Its options, some very significant percentage of the total options traded. That's up today. What are you looking for there, and what are you looking for today in earnings?
I was just about to talk about options, because we've had some crazy numbers about retail flows and options, but let's wait with that for tomorrow, because there's some interesting things going on in that area as well. The Tesla, right, is our primary earnings focus today. They will report after the market close. We know they will post very strong Q4 earnings, as you can see on the on slide 10 here. The chart that shows quarterly delivery numbers for battery electric vehicles is just off the roof for Tesla in Q4. So we know it's going to be a strong quarter. I think to me, it's all about the outlook. We know there are a lot of constraints in the semiconductor industry. There are we're seeing too little supply of lithium. Some industry experts are saying that we could have a deficit on the supply side for a couple of years. So I'm very curious to see Tesla, how they're navigating arguably very strong demand for their cars versus a supply side that is not as flexible as they probably would like it to be. And then I've updated the Q4 delivery numbers for XPeng, NIO, and Li Auto, the three main players in China. And look at XPeng and Li Auto. I mean, they really have figured out how to scale and ramp up their production in the last two quarters, whereas NIO is just stuck in the mud. But it sure feels like that the Volkswagen is getting some serious competition from behind now. And I'm very curious to see how they performed in Q4. We also have Intel reporting today. Interesting, of course, from the semiconductor angle. But then otherwise, I would like to highlight Southern Copper, which is one of the larger copper miners in the world. And it's obviously, as we've talked about, Ole and I in recent writings, it's a bet on electrification and urbanization. So and you know, we think there is a pretty strong outlook for copper. So it's I think it's for people that wants to have exposure outside, you know, all this tech and technology. As I said, we highlight the commodity sector. Look at something like Southern Copper for sure.
All right, and that takes us to the macro calendar. We've already sort of previewed the Bank of Canada, the FOMC. I think people are, you know, it's really difficult to measure how the market is positioned. Certainly, it's sort of come off the boil in terms of Fed expectations, but I certainly am not expecting the Fed to pivot dovish in any way or act that it's scared of its own shadow. But, you know, I guess it would be fair to ponder whether there is the chance that they sort of give the sense that they've reached some sort of cruising altitude, if you will, in terms of that they're happy that they've impressed with their forward guidance, and there's not really any significant delta or significant change in that guidance for what it plans to do, i.e. the certainty of a March basic 25 basis point rate hike, etc. But they almost can't avoid surprising in some sense. So we'll have to watch for that. Again, New Zealand Q4 CPI, if you're trading the Kiwi, that will be a very key release there. And given the lack of a very strong majority over the Bank of Canada decision, that has to be a surprise either way there, plus, of course, the guidance. And then we start to get into the GDP estimates, the first ones for Q4 for the U.S. tomorrow, and the key PCE inflation for December. We've already seen the main CPI print, but this is the one that the Fed tracks, so we'll have to watch for that on Friday. With that, it's been a bit of a long one, so we'll wrap it up here, and we will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.